the gun to Andrea.
Baby, Marvin said grudgingly. Just until they patch you up.
I don't need patching up, it's just a scratch.
Do it for me, okay, Marvin? Give the gun to Andrea and let them have a look at you.
You're a pain in the ass, Tatum.
Tatum sighed in relief, listening to Marvin call Andrea to give her the gun. There was some back and forth, and finally, Officer Collier got back on the line.
Your grandfather's being taken care of, he said. Thanks. He's a piece of work. That he is. But from what we could figure out, he saved this girl's life. He's one tough son of a bitch. He's that, too.
Tatum sat on the bed, exhausted.
What about Rod Glover? Is he dead? He ran away. He's currently missing.
Missing?
Tatum gritted his teeth.
Weren't you people watching the damn building? How could he be missing? We're still looking into that. Don't worry, we'll find him in a few hours. He won't get far. He bled all over the place.
Right,
Tatum grunted.
I have to go, officer. Thanks for your help.
He hung up and shut his eyes, worried about Zoe. She'd been in a hell of a state when she'd left, and he should never have let her drive like that. Chapter 78. San Angelo, Texas, Tuesday, September 13th, 2016. Despite the chaos of the night before, Tatum showed up for Nicole Medina's funeral. The priest's voice droned, echoing in the church's packed sanctuary. The constant sound of people murmuring served as background noise. Tatum regarded the people around him, estimating that probably only 1 out of 10 actually knew Nicole Medina or her parents. Most were reporters or just curious onlookers. Tatum was edgy from lack of sleep. He'd spent hours the previous night talking with Mancuso, with the police officers handling the manhunt after Rod Glover, and with the medical team looking after Marvin and Andrea. Then he'd lain in bed, trying to sleep. He wasn't sure when he'd fallen asleep, but he had a hunch it wasn't long before the alarm had buzzed him awake. Remembering that he didn't have a car, he'd called Foster, filling him in, asking for a ride. Foster had told him he wasn't coming. He was too busy managing the investigation, but that Lyons would pick him up. She'd shown up 15 minutes later, and he'd had to update her regarding Zoe's absence as well, a duty he hadn't relished. Now they sat next to each other, surveying the crowd, searching for a killer. Tatum doubted he'd show up there, but you never knew. He scanned the faces around him, trying to gauge who matched the killer's profile. A whole lot of people, really. Though he and Zoe knew a lot about how the killer's mind worked, they never progressed very far when it came to knowing how he looked. About 40, quite strong, Caucasian. Also, Tatum had a very vague idea of his build from the first video. A familiar face caught his attention and he frowned, trying to place it, until it clicked. It was Harry Berry. He sat in the back, jotting in a small notebook. Their eyes met and Harry nodded at him. A police photographer was there as well, taking pictures of the people who showed up. Later, Foster and Lyons would have a field day sorting the images. Tatum had already decided he wouldn't be joining them. After the funeral, he would tie up loose ends and go back home. Marvin needed him, and so did Zoe. One of the GPR teams found another of the killer's pits, Lyons whispered to him, reading a message on her phone.
Good,
Tatum muttered. The noose was tightening. He was quite certain by now that it was only a matter of days until this killer would be caught. The San Angelo Police Department didn't need him there. Still, he scrutinized the faces around him, wondering if the man they'd chased for the past week was in sight. He focused back on the priest, who seemed to be finishing up the ceremony, standing above the coffin. It was a closed casket funeral. Nicole's body was past the embalmer's abilities. His phone buzzed and he checked it. He didn't recognize the number. He declined the call, put the phone back in his pocket.
They're about to wrap up here, he said. I'll stand outside. Watch everyone as they're leaving. Maybe you should stay behind.
Okay. Lyons only half listened. She was reading another email on her phone. Glancing over her shoulder, Tatum saw it was the crime scene report from Deborah Miller's grave. It seemed disappointingly short. Nothing found in the crime scene aside from the body and the crate it had been buried in. Unlike the other murders, there had been no objects found in the crate. No camera or cable, no props, and nothing had been found on the body except her purse. Lyons slipped a finger over her screen and began reading the autopsy report. He stood up discreetly and walked outside. It was the hottest day since they'd gotten there, and the fact that he wore a suit didn't help. He was sweating already. He decided to go for a swim once he returned to the motel, then figure out what flight to take. He watched as the church doors opened and people milled outside. More than a dozen press photographers hurried forward to video the procession. Tatum shook his head and focused on the rest of the crowd. Could the killer be hiding under the guise of a photographer? It wasn't likely. His phone buzzed again, the same number as before. He put the phone to his ear.
Hello?
Is this Tatum? A female voice, fragile, somewhat familiar.
Yeah, who's this?
It's Andrea. Zoe's sister.
Oh, right.
She sounded like a ghost of her former self.
How are you feeling?
A bit better. Woozy. They keep sedating me. Listen, do you know where Zoe is? Her phone is unavailable. He felt a stab of worry.
Well, she said she's flying back from Austin, so she's probably on the plane. That's why she's unavailable.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Andrea sounded relieved, a sensation Tatum didn't share. If she contacts you, can you tell her to give me a call? Let me know when she's getting here.
Sure.
Thanks, Tatum. Bye. She hung up. Tatum eyed the procession distractedly as they carried the coffin to the graveyard.
Lyons was in the back of the procession, and he drew her attention, signaling her he'd join her in a minute. She nodded. He dialed Zoe, and the call went straight to voicemail. He hung up and dialed Foster.
Yeah,
Foster answered, sounding impatient.
Foster, listen, it's Tatum. Sorry to bother you, but Zoe's phone is offline. She might be on her flight right now, but she drove off in quite a state last night. I'm worried that something happened. You want me to check the accident reports from last night? If it's not too much trouble,
Tatum said, feeling relieved that Foster had offered.
She drove a silver Hyundai Accent to Austin. Sure. I'll call you back in a few. Thanks, Foster. I really appreciate it.
He hung up and followed the procession, watching them lowering the coffin into the grave. Nicole's mother wept uncontrollably. Tatum decided to drop any pretense that he was looking for a killer and just pay his respects to the woman they hadn't managed to save. His phone buzzed, and he stepped away from the crowd. It was Foster.
Listen, Tatum, there was no accident involving a woman with Zoe's description. Two accidents with silver Hyundai Accents, but both were not rentals, and the people involved weren't Zoe. Then I guess she's on her flight.
Tatum exhaled with relief.
There's no flight currently en route between Austin and any airport in Virginia.
Tatum frowned.
Maybe she forgot to turn on her phone after the flight? Maybe. The last flight landed 2 hours ago.
Tatum's heart sank. In that case, Zoe would almost certainly have reached Andrea by now.
Thanks, Foster. Keep me posted when you talk to her. Sure. Bye.
He hung up and dialed Zoe's number, getting the voicemail again. He tried twice more with no success. A vague sensation of dread began spreading in his gut. Chapter 79. Tatum's internal clock kept tallying seconds and minutes. 50 minutes since the moment he'd realized Zoe had disappeared. He paced in his motel room, calling different people in San Angelo, in Austin, in Quantico, anyone who could help, give him a shred of information. He kept thinking of the way she'd left, half-coherent, eyes dull. He should never have let her drive like that, but he had been worried about Marvin and had had a momentary lapse of judgment. He kept thinking of the Hyundai lying upside down at the foot of a ravine along the way or in a ditch. Images of Zoe in the car bleeding, unconscious or dead, flickered in his mind. His phone rang. Mancuso.
Zoe never checked into any flight.
Mancuso's voice was high with tension.
Any news on road accidents?
DPS sent patrol cars on every main route between San Angelo and Austin searching for her,
Tatum said.
She must have taken Route 71, and it's a good road. It's not likely she would have lost her way. And if she had an accident on it, we'd have already...
His gut sank.
Known. Shit, Mancuso, I'll call you back.
He hung up and dashed out of the room. She hadn't gotten on any flight, and they couldn't find her on the way to Austin. But there was one place he'd never checked. It hadn't even occurred to him. The parking lot was on the other side of the motel. The rental still stood there. Zoe hadn't taken it after all. Could she have decided to take an Uber, realizing she couldn't drive? Tatum doubted it. He doubled back, deciding to check her room. He strolled inside the lobby, trying to seem as casual as he could. He could pull a badge to get a key to Zoe's room, but the desk clerk might call the manager, and they'd say he needed a search warrant. He had no time. The girl behind the desk had seen him and Zoe pass through together multiple times. He forced a smile onto his face.
Hey, he said. My friend locked herself out of her room. Do you have a spare key?
She looked at him uncertainly. Tatum broke eye contact and coughed, feigning embarrassment.
She's, waiting in my room. She doesn't have her clothing with her at the moment.
The girl blushed and tried to hide her smile. She located a spare key and handed it to Tatum. It took a lot of self-control not to dash away with it. His heart was in his throat as he opened the door. Zoe's room was a mess. Papers were scattered on the bed, some on the floor. He went through them quickly. They were all related to the Schrodinger case. He found a pair of discarded stockings in the corner by the bed. Her toothbrush and the rest of her toiletries were still in the bathroom, and he guessed she'd forgotten to pack them in her haste. There were some pictures of the latest crime scene on the night table, and he picked them up to flip through them. Then noticed a business card underneath. Joseph Dodson, air conditioning technician and electrician. Tatum frowned, confused, then recalled the man he'd seen leaving Zoe's room that morning a few days before. A very large man. He held the card between thumb and forefinger, trying to think this through, when his phone rang. The number was one he didn't know, but he'd called a lot of people in the past couple of hours.
Hello?
He answered.
Agent Gray.
The man on the other side breathed heavily, voice unsteady.
It's Harry, the reporter.
I don't have time right now to.
I just got another email from Schrodinger. A video.
This didn't sound like the cynical, smooth-talking reporter Tatum had spoken with. The man was on the verge of hysteria.
I'm sending you the link.
He hung up. A second later, the phone bleeped as it received an incoming message. It wasn't one of the regular random URLs from before. This was a link to a YouTube video. Tatum tapped the link, and the video showed up on screen. Tatum's knees buckled, and he sat on the bed heavily as he stared at Zoe's face. Chapter 80. Darkness. For a second, Zoe thought it was still night, but she'd pulled the blinds down. Her mouth was dry, woolly. She shifted, perhaps to reach for her phone, see what time it was. She couldn't move her hands. They were bound behind her back. She could feel the hard bite of something holding her wrists together. Her mouth was gagged. A jumble of sensations and fragments of memory surfaced. Pain. Her body ached all over, an echo of a much worse pain from before. She kicked with her foot, hit something hard just above it. She was dreaming. It sometimes happened. She was so focused on her cases that she had nightmares about them. But the pain in her body, the bite in her wrists, the feeling in her mouth. It was all too real. And the darkness was absolute. The sort of darkness where she couldn't tell the difference when she shut her eyes. She tried to pull her hands free, wriggled, hitting wooden walls on both sides. Panicking, she tried to sit up, hit her forehead. It wasn't silent in the cramped, dark space. A muffled, consistent screeching filled the void around her. Only when her throat began burning did she realize it was her, screaming through the gag, consumed by terror. It wasn't a rational fear. It was something primal. The acute fear of being trapped in the dark, unable to move, the walls of the box closing in on her. Anywhere she moved, she felt the outline of a wall, sturdy, impregnable. And beyond it, she suddenly knew was only earth. Rocks and soil in all directions. Even if her hands were untied, she'd still be trapped in this tiny abyss. Zoe's body took control as she shrieked, wriggled and shook her head. All rational thoughts fading in the hurricane of fear that stormed through her mind. Chapter 81. She screamed again. Tatum stiffened. The sound was unbearable.
Mute the damn thing, Foster said, his voice cracking.
He was talking on the phone. Tatum was in the Situation Room with Foster and Lyons. They'd set up a laptop on the table, the video constantly running on it. He knew that throughout the station, screens were displaying the same video, speakers emitting the same screams. He checked his watch, as he'd done more than a dozen times since he'd entered the room. It had been 1 hour and 20 minutes since the video had started. It was impossible to know how long Zoe had been in that box. 2 hours? 3? 8? Lyon sat in front of the computer, her eyes shimmering. She didn't mute the video, and they all knew why. There was a chance, however slight, that the same trick they'd used for Juliet Beach would work here. Foster had sent patrol cars blaring music at full volume as soon as Tatum had told him about the video. But when Zoe was quiet, they could hear nothing else. And Tatum knew Schrödinger would never make the same mistake twice. Wherever she was buried deep, well beyond sound. "Another comment," Lyon said. "This is fake. Fake spelled with CK." For the first time, Schrödinger's video had comments. They had a view count and even a thumbs-up, thumbs-down indication. Schrödinger had embraced YouTube wholeheartedly, creating his own channel called Schrödinger. The video was named Experiment Number 4. FBI and DPS cyberfighting teams were attempting to trace the feed, but Tatum wasn't hopeful. He paced the room. But now he paused and stared at the screen again. The video feed was darker than before. It was hard to see the details. Zoe lay on her back, a gag in her mouth, hair disheveled, face wet with tears. Beyond her, Tatum could just glimpse the darkness of a wooden wall. There were no props, no metal contraptions labeled as poison or explosives. The feed ran steadily with no changes. For a moment, his mind clouded, blind panic flooding his brain, his thought process washed away by huge, frothing waves of pure fear for Zoe's life. He forced himself to breathe, to think of it rationally. He would be of no use to Zoe like this. He checked the time again. 1 hour and 23 minutes since the video had started. They had 2 GPR teams searching as fast as they could. Tatum had used Zoe's formula to figure out the wider radius of the search parameter, and they were focusing on it, but of course, since Zoe's grave was probably filled with a clay-rich soil, the chance they would find anything was almost zero, even if they stood right on top of her. The canine units were searching the same areas as well.
"Shepard's out," Foster put down his phone. "I just spoke with the surveillance crews that were on him. He had no opportunity to take Zoe."
Tatum nodded.
Zoe thought he wasn't a likely suspect.
He still felt his heart clench. Shepard was one of the few leads they had.
"The only suspect we have for now is that guy Joseph Dodson,"
Foster said.
"They should be picking him up any minute now. Any thoughts about him?"
Thoughts. Tatum forced himself to concentrate, to think about it clinically.
"He's approximately the right age. He's strong. He works as an electrician and an air conditioning technician, so he probably has a van he works with. It's likely he could acquire the relevant technical knowledge that was needed to film the girls he'd buried and broadcast it. Also, he was close to Zoe, so he could get details about the investigation from her."
"I like him for it,"
Foster said darkly. They all became silent. Zoe's frantic breathing emanated from the computer, and Tatum clenched his fists. "Why YouTube?" Lyons asked for the 3rd time in the past hour.
"Probably because of the comments,"
Foster said impatiently.
"He wants to see the shocked and horrified comments of the viewers."
Tatum frowned, thinking about it.
"It doesn't fit the profile. This guy doesn't want to engage. He wants to show people he's smart. If he wanted comments, he could have let people post comments on the previous experiments as well. My guess is he doesn't care about the comments. It's just random noise. What then?"
Tatum looked at the video. What did YouTube give its users aside from comments? It had to be something the killer couldn't do on his own website. All he could think of was ads, and he doubted the killer was concerned about revenue. "Traffic." Lyons suddenly pointed at the view count. It had just become 4 digits and was climbing steadily.
"That's it,"
Tatum agreed, trying to ignore the nausea in his guts.
"With Juliet Beach, people already reported they couldn't get the feed. The website couldn't handle the traffic. And this time I think he wants to go big. He wants everyone to see it. He wants his precious fame."
"YouTube will remove the video once it's reported," Lyon said. "What then?"
"We can't let them,"
Tatum said, his heart missing a beat.
"I'll handle it."
He would call Mancuso, Tell her to contact YouTube, explain the situation, and stop them from removing the video until Zoe was safe. Even as he thought it, he realized he was doing exactly what the killer wanted. He was carrying out the bastard's job for him. Foster's phone rang and he answered it.
Yeah, bring him here, and get him to interview room one.
He hung up. Joseph Dodson? Lyons asked.
Yes, Foster said. They just picked him up. We're working on a search warrant.
We might not have enough for a search warrant, Lyons pointed out.
We'll search his home no matter what,
Foster said grimly.
We'll get what we need to find her.
Chapter 82. Zoe lay exhausted, not knowing how much time had passed since she had woken up. She felt like she occasionally blacked out, but wasn't sure if she really did lose consciousness, or if her mind simply disconnected, leaving her body to flail blindly in panic. She had no way to measure the passage of time, aside from the slow, relentless increase in the pressure of her bladder and the close to unbearable thirst. Thinking back on the day before, she realized she hadn't drunk much and now paid for it dearly. But it would be suffocation that would kill her long before thirst. For the first time since she'd woken up, she was exhausted enough to stop thrashing and to slowly think of her situation. When they'd started the investigation, the analyst had estimated that Nicole Medina would run out of air in 12 hours. Juliet Beach had been buried alive for 9 hours, and she'd been almost dead when they'd found her. Zoe had no idea if the box she was in was the same size, but it was safe to assume it was close enough. She was smaller than the average woman, meaning that maybe there had been more air in the box when she'd been shut there. All her thrashing and screaming had significantly lowered that amount. The best thing she could do to maximize the time she had was sleep, lowering her breathing rate significantly. But that wasn't an option right now. The discomfort she was in was too severe, so she'd have to lie still and stay calm. It was the stay calm she had an issue with. She could still feel the cavernous terror just at the edge of her mind, waiting for her to touch one of the walls, feel the space closing in on her again. Think of the tons of sand and dirt that lay on top of her small, confined space. She tried some basic relaxation techniques, focusing on her body, trying to loosen her muscles, breathing steadily. But she couldn't focus properly, and frightened thoughts kept assaulting her. She lost control for a while, kicked around the walls of her enclosure, cried. She'd have to try something else. If she couldn't calm herself by emptying her mind, she'd have to calm herself by filling it. This was something she found much easier to do. In fact, it was her default state. She tried to think about Andrea, but there was too much uncertainty there, too much fear of a different kind, and she quickly shied away from those thoughts. Her sister was alive and, for now, probably in a much better situation than Zoe was. Then it occurred to her that she was probably being filmed. If she could glean anything about her situation, perhaps she could somehow let her viewers know about it. She could save herself. The idea that she would be able to extract herself from this situation immediately reduced her terror of being trapped. She wiggled a bit, got her cheek against the wall of the box. It was wooden, but somehow smooth. She tried to recall how smooth the boxes of the other victims had been. Was this box different somehow? She tried to sniff the interior, maybe smell something that could help. But all she could smell was herself. Then she lay silent and listened hard for what felt forever. Nothing. Of her five senses, taste and sight were out of the picture. So far, touch, smell, and sound had given her nothing. She tried to remember what had happened the night before. The memory was fragmented, and she estimated it was probably because she had been so distraught. She recalled deciding to fly from Austin, a brief interaction with Tatum. She couldn't remember anything they'd said. She'd walked to the parking lot and then pain. All of her muscles had been rigid with pain. She hadn't been able to move. He had tased her and then somehow had knocked her out. A shift from his previous strategy. He was clearly even more confident than before. Or more desperate. Perhaps a bit of both. She tried hard to remember whether she'd managed to see anything helpful. She remembered seeing the rental in the dark and then nothing. Just pain. She didn't let herself lose hope. She knew how memory worked. It often returned in surprising bursts of clarity. She would wait. But she had to keep her mind busy. She had her eyes closed, and as long as she didn't move, it was possible to almost forget where she was. She focused on the case. That was the best way for her to keep busy. When she worked, she could think about a case for hours, trying to get into the killer's mindset, figuring out his motives, compulsions, the things that made him tick. Usually, she would surround herself with photographs of the crime scenes and the victims, but she had to work with the hand she'd been dealt. Last night, before Andrea had called, her mind lingered there for a second and she forced it away. She had been focused on Deborah Miller. Deborah Miller was the first victim, the one who'd prodded the killer to act. If the killer knew who Deborah was and that she was running away, he could figure no one would report her missing. Could that be all there was? No. There were endless homeless girls who had no one to look for them. They'd probably be easier to pick up since many of them were prostitutes. But this killer always focused on girls who had a home and a life. Deborah might have been messed up, but she also came from a family who loved her, and she had a place to come back to. She tried to find a common trait between Deborah and the rest of the girls, but there was none. Deborah was significantly older than the rest of the victims. She was a drug addict, unhealthy. The others were fine. Deborah was searching for a way out of her current life, which might resemble Maribel Howe, but not Juliet and Nicole. She decided to try to attack the problem differently, see what the three other victims had in common, and try to figure out how this applied to Deborah Miller. Physically, the three women were different, but all three were good-looking. Juliet Beach was quite stunning, in fact, but all three would make heads turn. Could the killer have seen Deborah as good-looking? She was thin, as were Juliet and Nicole. But Maribel was curvy and had plump cheeks. Zoe doubted just looks could be the answer. He stalked the girls using social media. She'd reviewed the accounts of all three extensively. They all posted frequently. All seemed happy, though that was hardly extraordinary on social media, the land of fake smiles. All took photos with various men. Maybe that was what set him off. Perhaps Deborah Miller had propositioned him somehow, making him think of her as slutty, just like the other girls. But that felt wrong. As far as Zoe could tell, all three girls' profiles were quite pure, in social media standards. No teasing photos, no bikinis or bare-backed shots or even kissy faces. Just photos of girls having fun, going out with friends. Friends. They were popular. Or at least, the social media equivalent of popular. A lot of pictures with different people and lots of followers. All three had over 500 followers in their Instagram accounts. So the three girls were beautiful and popular, while Deborah was lonely and sick-looking. Did he target them because they were the opposite of Deborah, or? Her mind latched onto something Deborah's father had said.
She'd been the sweetest, happiest kid when she was at school. So popular, surrounded by friends.
In the sensory deprivation chamber Zoe was trapped in, she could hear his voice in her ear as if he were next to her. When she was at school. As far as the killer was concerned, the four victims were the same, beautiful, popular. But Deborah had become unhappy and lonely as soon as school had ended. He was a local boy. He'd gone to school with her. She was suddenly completely sure of it. He'd gone to school with her. She, the popular, happy girl. Him, the weird kid who had no friends. Hours upon hours to fantasize about her in class. His profile clearly painted him as obsessive, and the same tendencies would have been there as a boy. It would be a fixation that would never completely dissipate. Then he met her, all those years later. Already stressed, probably because of something at work. Maybe he was fired, or skipped for promotion, or got a boss who hated him. And there she was, after more than 20 years, back in his life. It would be enough to trigger a reaction to fulfill his fantasy. That was enough to hone down on him. How many students in one high school? 1,000? Cross-check them with her profile, maybe fingerprint them to match the partial fingerprint they already had, and that was it. Unfortunately, those were not things she could do right now. But the police could. And Tatum. She had to communicate this somehow. Chapter 83. A uniformed officer opened the door of the Situation Room.
Foster, Joseph Dodson is here.
Good, Foster said. Be right there.
The man closed the door and Foster turned to face Tatum and Lyons.
Okay. We need to be smart here. We don't have much time.
Tatum nodded. Usually, they'd let the man sweat a bit before storming in, playing good cop, bad cop. But every minute the suspect was waiting, Zoe was suffocating. Tatum glanced at the screen. For the past 20 minutes, she'd been lying with her eyes closed, not moving. It was almost worse than before, when she'd struggled and screamed.
How do you think we should play this?
He asked.
You go in first, Foster said.
He already saw you once. He knows that you know who he is. It might unsettle him. We should probably get you some props like last time with Shepard. Pictures from crime scenes, a thick folder, his business card in an evidence bag. We already have the phone records, so we can act it out a bit. Make it sound like we know a lot more than we actually do. Then I come in, tell him I can keep the feds off his back if he tells us where Zoe is right now. Something like that?
Tatum hesitated. It sounded like a reasonable strategy with an everyday criminal. But for this serial killer?
What about the warrant to his house?
He asked.
We might be able to interrogate him better if we had something concrete.
Foster sighed.
Lyons is working on it. If we don't get it in 10 minutes, I think we'll just...
He waved his hand ambiguously, clearly not wanting to spell it out. Tatum had already caught the drift. Foster was intent on searching the man's house, legal or not. He appreciated it. He had something else that held him back. Zoe had apparently slept with this man. Would she really have been so blind, not to see the signs? As a child, she'd been on friendly terms with Rod Glover, and she still carried the emotional scars. Tatum wanted to believe his partner would never let herself be intimate with someone who could possibly be a killer. Of course, some psychopaths were very good actors. This interrogation could take hours. If they were wrong about Dodson, Zoe's chances would decrease from slim to none.
Tell you what,
he said.
You go first, props and all. Then in half an hour I'll join in, do the whole FBI spiel. While hopefully Lyons gets whatever we need from this guy's apartment.
You sure?
Foster frowned.
Yeah. I want to think it through a bit. Get my ducks in a row.
Foster glanced at the laptop for a long second, exhaled and left the room, closing the door behind him. Tatum turned to the laptop. Zoe lay with her eyes open now, still not moving. The only thing that indicated she was still alive was her occasional blinking. The view counter was in 6 digits by now. The story had hit all the main news channels, and the link to the video had become viral. The killer was getting what he wanted. The world was watching.
What would you say if you were here?
He asked the screen. He got up and paced back and forth in the room. Even if Joseph was the wrong man, what else could he do? What would Zoe do? She'd analyze what they knew, estimate what it meant, try to reach new conclusions. Zoe screamed through her gag again, thrashing from side to side. Tatum took 3 steps to the laptop and muted the sound. Enough people were watching the damn video. If there was anything worth hearing, they'd let him know. He sat by the table, took out his notebook, and bit his lower lip. Then he wrote down, "The unsub attacked her in the parking lot." That much was almost a certainty. The parking lot was dark, and Tatum doubted Zoe would have headed anywhere else once she had the keys. He tapped the pen on the notebook and then added, "He was stalking her, waiting for the right moment." This was a shift in the killer's strategy. He'd chosen Zoe as his target and was actively stalking her. Why? Fame? Or did he get a kick out of taking the one who was closest to finding him? Zoe had publicly shamed him in that article. Maybe that was what had made him act. Tatum tried to imagine this guy Joseph doing something like that. It didn't fit. If Joseph wanted to take her, it would make more sense for him to knock on her door. She already knew him. She'd open the door, and he could incapacitate her in the room, maybe drug her like he had with the others. Once he questioned it, other things began to feel strange. When the killer had tried to break into the gas station, he'd had latex gloves on. But Joseph was an electrician. Tatum's uncle had worked as an electrician. Tatum recalled that he'd used special rubber gloves when working, much thicker and sturdier than simple latex gloves. Joseph would have used those. Joseph was big. Though it was hard to estimate the killer's size in the first video, Tatum doubted he was that big. He also doubted that knowing how big he was, the killer would film himself. Besides, Zoe would have known. Chapter 84. Zoe tried grunting into her gag, nearly threw up, had a brief panic attack, and forced herself to stop. Could she remove the gag? She tried to push it out with her tongue, then froze. Not only the police were watching, he watched her as well. And if she'd managed to get the gag out or to signal anything, he'd kill the feed, and her chance to help them would be gone. It would have to be something he wouldn't notice, or that he'd figure out only after someone else got the message. No hand messages, no words, no sounds. Blinking. That was the only safe course of action. How she would have loved to know Morse code right now. Did anyone still know Morse? Just a few short and long blinks, and she could pass any message to the people watching her. But no Morse for her. The only other possibility was blinking letters according to numerical value. One blink for A, two blinks for B, and 26 damn blinks for Z. A significant pause between each letter. They'd have to insert the spaces between the words themselves. She composed a short message in her head. The killer knew Deborah Miller at school. She could definitely make it shorter, do her best to avoid the second half of the ABC. He knew Deborah at school. Much better. Okay. H was 8, E was 5, K was 11. She began blinking. It was nearly impossible. She had to blink naturally or the killer would notice something was wrong instantly. That meant short, light blinks. She had to count them carefully. And counting blinks in complete darkness, where she couldn't really distinguish if her eyes were open or shut. She got all the way to the W of new, and she was pretty sure she'd screwed up the H and the N on the way. She let out a frustrated sob. She'd have to start over until she got it right. But the killer was smart. He'd noticed something irregular with her blinking. This would never work. She'd have to make the message shorter. Much shorter. She'd have to trust someone to figure out what she was trying to say. Tatum. She'd have to trust Tatum would figure it out. She'd talked to him about the connection between the killer and Deborah. She'd left all the notes about Deborah in her room. Tatum would know it was what she had in mind. Her new message was simply school. 19, 3, 8, 15, 15, 12. It still felt impossible. She decided to try. But if she didn't give the killer what he wanted, he might shut off the feed out of frustration or boredom. She couldn't let that happen. She bucked and screamed again. He sat at work, door locked to make sure no one came in and watched her. He knew he had things to do, but he just couldn't pull his eyes away from the feed. The first hour was the best. She'd been completely out of control, and he'd felt an unimaginable thrill as she'd cried and screamed. Not so cold and calculating now, was she? That was what happened when people were shut in the darkness and had time to really think. But when she calmed down, he began to feel frustrated. She was cheating him. The video was only 73 minutes long so far. He needed more. She lay still for an eternity, and he wished he could prod her into moving again. Maybe that was what he should do in future experiments. He'd have to think about it. She opened her eyes and for a while just blinked. What was wrong with her eyes? A nervous reaction of some kind? And then she bucked and screamed again, even wilder than before, and it was a thrill to watch. Soon, lust came over him and he fumbled for the Kleenex on his desk, breathing hard, face flushed. By the time he was done, she'd stopped screaming and was lying with her eyes closed. He let out a shuddering breath. This was the best experiment he'd done so far. Tatum's phone rang. It was Harry. Tatum answered quickly.
Yeah? Are you watching the video?
Harry asked, sounding tense.
No, why? Watch the damn video. I think Zoe is trying to signal something.
Tatum hurried to the screen and watched. At first, he didn't see anything unusual. She just lay there blinking. But then he realized she was blinking fast, and then pausing, blinking fast and pausing.
She's
blinking in a pattern.
It's not Morse. I already checked.
Zoe suddenly shut her eyes. After a few seconds, she began twisting and kicking again. Tatum tensed in sympathy, glancing away.
I think she's acting,
Harry said. Tatum turned back to the screen.
How can you tell?
I've been writing about sex scandals and celebrities for years. Trust me, I know when someone's acting fake.
Harry sounded annoyingly smug.
She'll stop in a bit. She's already done this twice before. You'll see.
Like Harry said, Zoe suddenly stopped, eyes shut, seeming exhausted.
Prepare for the blinking.
Suddenly Zoe opened her eyes and blinked. It took Tatum a second to react.
Count them,
he barked into the phone.
Count the blinks.
He counted them himself, scribbling the results in his notebook. After a minute, she shut her eyes and lay still.
Okay,
Harry said.
I have 18, 3, 15, 27.
I have 17, 3, 15, 15, 11,
Tatum muttered.
I'm pretty sure there was a pause after the second 15.
If there was a pause, you'd get 15, 12 to make 27.
You counted wrong. It's 15, 11. It's not Morse, so it's probably letters. The number is the letter's position in the ABC.
Okay, so let's see. 17 is ABC.
Do it quietly,
Tatum snapped.
I can't think like that.
He jotted the ABC and the corresponding numbers. Then he matched it to what he'd counted. On the laptop screen, Zoe was thrashing again.
Right,
Harry said.
I got R-chook. That doesn't make any sense.
I have Q-chook,
Tatum muttered.
If I counted right and just missed the pause, it would be 12 at the end, which would mean R-cool.
School,
Tatum shouted.
It's school.
Right.
Harry sounded excited as well.
So, she's telling us she's buried in a school?
That makes sense,
Tatum hesitated.
How would she know where she's buried?
Maybe she heard some school noises before she was buried.
That's probably it,
Tatum agreed.
I'll get people looking into it right now.
Great. Keep me updated.
Uh-huh,
Tatum said, hanging up. He was about to hurry out of the room, then paused. Zoe had been trying to search for a link between Deborah and the killer. Could that be what she meant? It was that feeling of indecision again. The wrong decision could waste precious time, cost Zoe her life. He decided to follow both leads. He'd tell Foster and Lyons about the school, get them to search for Zoe in local schools. That was the more likely scenario. And he'd look into Deborah's school life on the off chance that this was what Zoe had meant. Chief Christine Mancuso talked on her phone nonstop, the video playing on her screen. She'd muted it long before she couldn't bring herself to turn it off. It felt like by turning it off, she'd be betraying Zoe somehow, abandoning her to the darkness. She'd just gotten off the phone after a long conversation with the special agent in charge of the San Antonio division. He'd sent six of his top men to San Angelo, and his analysts were working around the clock to find Zoe. Words, Mancuso guessed, that were mostly aimed to reassure her or to cover his ass. Maybe both. But it was all she could do. Talk to anyone who could help. She dialed Tatum again to get an update, but the line was busy. Then the phone rang in her hand.
Hello? Is this Agent Mancuso?
The voice was familiar, but she couldn't place it.
This is Chief Mancuso.
Oh, Chief, right. This is Mitchell Lonnie from the Glenmore Park PD. Remember me?
It took her a moment to place him. Pretty boy. Sad green eyes.
Yeah, Lonnie, I remember.
Listen, I'm watching the video.
Me too, Lonnie. I don't have any updates right now, I'm sorry.
Oh, listen, I figured out something. Zoe's trying to tell us something. She's blinking letters and...
School. Mancuso cut him off. She's blinking the word school.
Silence stretched.
Right,
Mitchell said at last.
I know. I had Zoe's partner and three analysts tell me that already.
I just want to help.
Mancuso shut her eyes, frustrated at herself.
I know, she said, her tone softer. Thanks. We're doing everything we can.
And that was the real snag. Lonnie or her or anyone around her couldn't do anything. Zoe was beyond their reach in almost every way, and all they were able to do was watch. In complete and utter darkness, Zoe kept on acting her routine. Thrash in panic for 30 seconds, count to 10, blink her message, rest for a minute. And again, Panic, pause, blink, rest. Panic, pause, blink, rest.
She had no idea if anyone was seeing her, had no idea if they got the message. She knew she would have to stop soon. She was consuming too much air. But for now, she kept going, blinking into the abyss and hoping.
He began to suspect something the fourth time she went into a screaming fit. Her moments of hysteria were too regular, almost like they were regulated somehow. With a woman like her, it almost made sense that even her loss of control would follow some sort of pattern. But still, he watched as she jerked and bucked, shaking her head. Her eyes were shut. But something was wrong. He'd seen several women in these situations, including her. And she was acting off somehow. She stopped, and then began that nervous blinking again. No, not nervous. Something else. Methodical. He watched closely, feeling his gut sink. It was some sort of signal. How had he missed it before? He'd been too consumed with his private emotions and lust, too engaged with her fear. She'd played him. He quickly paused the video, killing the feed. Then, after a moment, he read the comments below the video. School. She's blinking the word school. This video is so fake. I think it's Shun. It's definitely school. I keep getting lost in the count. Fake. Shul. Yeah, Shul. Hundreds of people had noticed it before him. He was close to panic. But then he forced himself to calm down. School? What did that even mean? Did she think she was buried in a school? He shook his head, bemused. There was nothing there. It was a good thing he'd figured it out before she managed to signal anything else. Chapter 85. The man who opened the door for Tatum looked terrible. Bloodshot eyes, pallid skin. His smell reminded Tatum of the way his aunt had smelled in the days before she died in the hospital. It didn't matter how much the nurses had aired her room and cleaned her. It couldn't clear the stench of death's proximity.
Mr. Miller?
Tatum asked. The man nodded, a weary what-the-hell-do-you-want nod. Tatum caught a whiff of alcohol on his breath.
I'm Agent Gray from the FBI.
He flicked his badge, though Miller didn't even glance at it.
Can I have a few minutes of your time?
Sure,
the man rasped.
Is this about Deborah?
Yeah, I wondered. Do you have Deborah's yearbooks?
He expected some questions, maybe an angry reaction. But Mr. Miller just nodded and motioned Tatum to follow him inside. The house was dark, and the same smell clung to every corner. Tatum found himself taking shallow breaths. Mr. Miller led him to a room that could only belong to Deborah herself. Unlike the rest of the house, this room was bathed in light. A large window was positioned above the bed, and though it was dusty, it let the sun in. There was a depression on the bed, as if someone had sat on it recently. Tatum was willing to bet that Mr. Miller had spent a lot of the past 24 hours there, grieving for the daughter he'd found out was long dead. A small bookcase stood in the corner with some books, albums, scrapbooks, and 4 yearbooks.
Can I take them?
Tatum asked.
I'd rather you didn't, the man said. But feel free to look through them.
Tatum didn't argue. He took the last one, from 1993.
Do you want anything to drink, Agent Gray?
Just water, thanks.
Tatum was already flipping the pages one by one. He had no actual plan, nothing to go on. But he figured it would be easy to peg the weird kids. The ones who dressed differently, who didn't appear in group photos, who didn't smile in their own photograph. That would be a good place to start. One thing was clear. Deborah had been incredibly popular. She'd been stunning, appeared in endless photos, and in the most cliche manner had been a part of the cheerleader squad. A lot different than the woman she'd become just before the killer had found her, an abused drug addict. Tatum paused as a familiar face caught his eye. A photo of a grinning African-American teenager. Samuel Foster. Of course. Tatum could kick himself. Foster had said he knew this girl from school. He'd just wasted valuable time when he could have done this with Foster all along, get first-hand knowledge about any of those kids. He was about to put the yearbook away, thank Miller, and return to the station. when another face drew his attention. A boy with a pair of large spectacles and messy, curly hair. The name underneath the picture was Clyde Prescott. Tatum frowned at the image, unable to shake the feeling that he'd seen this fellow Clyde a bunch of times. He flipped through the yearbook, but Clyde wasn't in any of the group photos or in any of the clubs. Clyde Prescott. Tatum took another look at him, at that solemn face, at the curly mass of hair. Curly. This was the medical examiner. Suddenly, the nickname he had made perfect sense. He had been Curly once, and he'd been with Foster at school. Curly had shown up at the scene the day before when they'd dug up the body, unlike the previous times. He'd hurried to the body as soon as he could, as if to make sure he got to it first. Had he been trying to remove something? A piece of evidence? And though Foster had reacted when he realized the victim had been at school with him, Tatum didn't recall Curly saying anything. That was downright bizarre. Anyone would have said something. Unless they wanted to avoid being associated with the victim. Tatum took a long breath, focusing, trying to see if more pieces fit. The killer had figured out they were about to locate Juliet Beach, as if he'd been tipped off. Curly could easily have found out, either by hanging around the police station or by calling one of his many acquaintances in the force. What was going on? What about the profile? Very intelligent, around 40, white, working at a job that demanded thoroughness but not speed. And there was his manner, always trying to show off, trying to prove how smart he was. That estimation of Maribel Howe's time of death, ridiculously specific. It was the same with Nicole Medina's time of death, a demonstration of his capabilities. The time of death. Tatum suddenly recalled the details of the Whitfield case, the dead prostitute who had been found buried in the desert. During the trial, it had turned out that the time of death had been off. Curly would have been one of the main people who'd be blamed when the suspect walked. Would he really have risked it happening again by estimating the time of death of Howe and Medina so specifically? Never. Not unless he'd known he was right. And it was easy to know it, if he'd killed them himself. That was the recent stressor in his life, the thing that had finally pushed him over the edge. The Whitfield case had been opened 8 months before. The trial had probably taken place a few months after that. The blaming fingers would have started pointing at Curly around April or May, just when Deborah Miller had been murdered. They'd thought the killer would want to insert himself into the investigation. That was why they'd begun the hotline, requesting information. But Curly was already a very integral part of the investigation. Tatum bunched his fists. Curly had easy access to the situation room, to their map, the outline of their profile, the crime scene photos. It was all very vague and circumstantial, but it felt right. He checked the time. It was almost 2. Zoe had been buried for about 6 hours. Right or wrong, they didn't have long to find her. All he had was a hunch. He had to verify it fast, see if he was right, and if not, he'd sit down with Foster, go over the rest of that school's students one by one. Which would take too damn long. Zoe's life depended on him. He had to be right. Chapter 86. Clyde Prescott irritably prepared the toxicology samples for the Bureau's lab. He'd already done blood and vitreous fluid, and now removed a portion from each of the organs, labeling them methodically. He was completely exhausted, having slept less than 3 hours the night before, and the task seemed Sisyphean and redundant. He wasn't thrilled with the upcoming visit of Agent Gray, who'd called him 20 minutes before, asking if he could drop by and check Maribel Howe's body for something. The agent was quite vague about what he needed, only saying it was related to Zoe Bentley's burial location. Clyde couldn't imagine what the agent was talking about. The rest of the police were concentrated in the widespread search of the local schools. He heard the steps of someone approaching and raised his eyes. It was Samuel Foster.
Hey, Curly.
Foster smiled at him wearily.
Hey, Samuel,
Clyde said.
Any progress? Nah. We still don't have enough canine units for the search. They're sending additional units from Austin and Houston, but so far nada.
He'd stopped about an hour ago, the detective said grimly.
We're hoping she's fine, but we're estimating she's been in that box for 7 hours. Could be more. I'm not optimistic.
It's a terrible business.
Clyde marked the container with the kidney portion using a black marker and set it on the counter.
How can I help you?
I'm here to meet Gray. He said he's coming over with a witness.
Clyde tensed slightly.
A witness? Yeah. Didn't really catch the details. Something about Maribel Howe's body.
Foster shrugged.
He said it'd just take a minute. He was very distraught. That's understandable. I can't imagine what the man's going through.
Clyde nodded and they both lapsed into an uncomfortable silence. Foster seemed to say something when Agent Gray stepped into the room.
Oh, good,
Foster said.
You're here. What's this about? I just wanted my witness to have a look at Maribel Howe's body,
Agent Gray said. He turned around.
You can come in, miss.
There was the sound of the hesitant footsteps of high-heeled shoes. And then Juliet Beach stepped into the room. Her gaze met Clyde's and she froze. Her eyes widened and she let out a sharp exhale, her hand flying to her mouth. Clyde's gut dropped. He leaned on the counter trying to act casual, but his fingers trembled.
Now, miss, if you don't mind having a look at...
Tatum paused when he saw Juliet's face.
Miss?
She let out a gasp and dashed out of the room.
Agent Gray,
Foster said.
What? Neither of you move,
Tatum barked.
Both of you stay right here.
He ran after the girl.
What was that all about?
Foster asked.
What was he doing bringing that girl here? She's already traumatized enough without walking into a goddamn morgue.
Clyde cleared his throat.
Maybe I should go after her,
he croaked.
This place is not for civilians. No offense, Curly, but you're not exactly a people person. I suppose I should follow him and see what this is all about, though. You probably should,
Curly said hurriedly.
The sooner we...
Gray stepped back in the room, blocking the doorway. His expression had morphed, his jaw clenched, eyes blazing in anger. Before he realized what he was doing, Clyde took two steps back, placing the autopsy table between them.
Well, Prescott,
Agent Gray growled.
Guess what? It's over. What are you talking about?
Clyde blurted.
What's that girl? What should I call you? Curly or Schrodinger? Which do you prefer? What?
Foster sputtered incredulously.
Agent Gray, what are you? He knows what I'm talking about.
The agent pointed a shaking finger at Clyde.
Don't you? I don't.
The blood drained from his face. The girl had recognized him. One glance and her memory had come back.
I have no idea what's going on.
He was thinking furiously. All he had to do was bullshit his way out of there, get to his car, drive off.
Agent Gray, are you saying Dr. Prescott is... that he is the serial killer? Go talk to Juliet,
the agent say.
She has a very interesting story to tell.
For a moment, no one moved.
It's ridiculous,
Clyde said.
Even if that girl thinks she recognizes me, she's been through a lot. She might be making accusations all over the place. Just before she said she didn't remember who had taken her, right?
Foster stared at him, his eyes narrowed.
Go get her,
Clyde urged.
Bring her here. We'll talk about it. You're right,
the agent suddenly said.
We don't have time to throw wild accusations around. Right. We can clear this up fast. Let's take your fingerprints. What? Compare them to the partial fingerprint we have, and the fingerprint from the attempted break-in into the gas station. It'd only take 15 minutes. I have a contact who can compare them super quick.
Foster watched Clyde intently.
What do you think, Dr. Prescott? Would you mind giving us your fingerprints?
He'd always known it would come to that. The least he could do was to act respectably.
No need,
he answered, feigning calm.
You got me.
He thought of Zoe Bentley, deep below the ground, his final experiment, the one that would make him famous. He would never tell them where she was. Chapter 87. Tatum left the morgue feeling exhausted.